You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Beach Season. Oh, man, I don't know about you guys, but this offseason is actually kind of flying by, especially this draft season. That's what happens when your team is a consistent Super Bowl champion and when you're going for a three-peat, that your off seasons are shortened. But it's hard to believe that the combine is literally just around the corner this next upcoming week. It seems like the Super Bowl parade and the Super Bowl just occurred, and now we're already, you know, you blink and the combine is about to happen. But we're here. So today we're going to preview it. We're going to talk about all things combine, what to look for, some guys to look for, some risers, some fallers, you know, and just some combine weird stuff in general. As always, I am accompanied by our resident, Raider heel, my homeboy, Crame Dog, Kramer Sansone. Kramer, what's hot? What's hot, Kramer? Tell us what's hot in the world. This is our new segment, everybody. We're going to do a new segment called What's Hot with Crame Dog. So, Kramer, what's hot?
So, what's hot to begin with? Your boy didn't get canceled after week one of us posting out this season of each season. But going down under with what's hot, WWE Elimination Chamber just happened at 4 o'clock in the morning, United States time, Central time here. And it was amazing. The Rhea Ripley mommy, who is from Australia, was able to defend the Women's Heavyweight Championship over there and retained. It was awesome. Mommy's awesome. And, I mean, I'm a believer of mommy, Rhea Ripley. I'm a wrestling nerd. I'm a wrestling nerd, though, so that's it.
Crikey, that's something to throw on the Barbie if I ever thought it. A crack of Foster's to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And today... Thank you. That is so hot. That is so
very hot. Thank you. And Rhea Ripley is hot too.
Oh, you say I'm a can't confirm, man, but
can't confirm.
I mean, she's no Halle Berry.
That's true. This is Halle Berry show.
This is the official. This is the official draft podcast of Halle Berry. The official Halle Berry draft podcast. So we will not have anybody besmirching Halle Berry's name on this podcast, and we will be talking about her as much as possible as it relates to the NFL draft.
Agreed.
Speaking of somebody who is hot, we are joined today by one of the preeminent film geniuses in the game today, the co-host of the AP Draft Room with Ron Kopp. One of our head film gurus, Caleb James, is here with us today. I don't know how we talked to his people and talked to his agents and got him on this show, because he was a hard get, you guys. He is a highly in demand, and I don't know. I didn't even think we had the budget for it, to be honest. I didn't think we had the budget to land him, but we lucked out. My kids are not going to college anymore. They're all going to have to work their way through school, but it was worth it to get Caleb on this episode. Caleb, welcome to this episode of Beach Season, man. We are so happy to have you.
Nah, thanks for having me on, man. I heard from Ron that you made a comment on this show last week that we're supposed to be the smart show and you guys are supposed to be the funny show. So I don't know. I guess we're gonna have some fun tonight though with this.
I don't know if we're supposed to be the funny show. More that, like, we're okay with celebrating our failures, and we think a lot of people take themselves too seriously, and we know that we're not going to be smarter than you guys. So it's like, you know, you're not going to be the valedictorian, so you might as well at least be the class clown and get a couple of things right every now and again.
Yeah,
so,
we know our role. We know.
We're just leaning into it. But Caleb, are you a big WWE fan?
Not really. No, to be honest with you, I've never really watched any of that stuff too closely.
I mean, I broadcast it for a living too, so I mean, that's cool. I'm always around the wrestling universe, man. That's my world.
Hey, I respect the game. I respect the game.
And listen, like, I mean, we don't hold it against you because you watch film and you actually study real sports. You're like an actual, like where, well, I mean, everybody thinks the NFL is fixed. So let's be honest. Like, maybe we're all just studying theater, but there's at least like a plausible deniability that what we study isn't predetermined.
Right. And so, I mean, basically what I do is like the fan fiction stuff, because the NFL's got their whole script. And then me and Ron, we have to like come up with the actual stuff on the side that, you know, just for the people, you know, like the side stories and all of that.
Speaking of fan fiction, this is a total tangent before we actually get into draft talk. Did you know that 50 Shades of Grey was originally Twilight fan fiction? Isn't that kind of wild just to think about? Yeah, 50 Shades of Grey started out as Twilight fan fiction.
They made a lot of money off of that.
Got the XXX content out of it too.
Listen, I would write the crap out of Twilight fan fiction if it turned into a 3-movie deal that made me that much money. Like I am not above writing anything to make that much money.
What I'm curious though, before anything we get going on this, is how did you figure this out, Rocky? Like, what are you looking up?
Obviously I was reading Twilight fan fiction.
Okay. So you're a Twilighter. Is that you?
No, I'm not a Twilighter. I can't remember what it was. I was doing some research for something else, and I came across it on the internet. Somebody was talking about it. I am a tried and true Swiftie and Halle Berry fan. Like, I can't be like a Twilight, 50 Shades of Grey, Halle Berry, Swiftie. Like, come on. Like, I am a 42-year-old married man with children. I can only like so many questionable fandoms before, like, you know, people start looking at me just a little bit cross-eyed.
It's never too late to add more, buddy. It's never too late.
Honestly, just lean into what you like. Like if you like it, you like it. And if people don't like you because you like it, screw them. Right? Like, that's kind of my thought.
That's fair.
Caleb, before we get started on actual football talk, because this is a football draft podcast, what's the one weirdest thing that you like that people don't know about?
Oh, man. On the spot with the weirdness right away. I don't know. I guess some people have told me that, like, some of the things I eat are a little bit adventurous sometimes. There's a good, you know, there's some pho shops around where I live, and I always make sure when I get a bowl of pho to get some of the tripe, which is the intestine that's all cleaned out and everything. It actually adds a really nice texture into the food. So I've been called disgusting for eating that before, but honestly, I'm like, get a little adventurous with some of the things you try here and there.
100%. I'm all about adventurous eating guts and anything else. If it's on the menu, man, I'll try it. Years ago, I was in Morocco and Tunisia, and I tried camel hump. I'll let you guys in on a little secret. It's not good. It doesn't taste good. Like, if you ever looked at a camel, like, nobody, I don't think in history has ever looked at a camel and said, man, that looks good. That looks tasty.
So it's literally the hump. You literally ate the hump.
It tastes as good as it looks. Like
the hump doesn't look good.
No, however you think a camel hump is going to taste, that's what it tastes like.
Did it taste a little sandy?
Yeah, it's just had like a little bit of hair on it. It was kind of really fatty, just like a big fatty
big thing. Piece of cartilage.
Yeah, it was disgusting. Like, I mean, if I had an opportunity, I'd never tried it. I would try it all over again because, you know, adventurous eating. But like, yeah, never once am I craving camel hump in my entire life. But we digress. We should get into some actual football here, guys, before Pete and Steve cancel us 2 weeks into the season. So before we get started, though, I do want to talk a little bit. We talked last week about Legarius Sneed and Chris Jones's contracts. And I put something out on Twitter this week. And the moment I put it on Twitter, I knew I was going to catch some smoke, you know, from Cheese Kingdom about it. And I simply said, given Legarius Sneed's age and his draft position, and given his history of knee injuries, I hope for his sake that he doesn't get franchise tagged. And if the Chiefs aren't going to offer, the Chiefs are not going to offer him at least 4 years, $80 million with like 50, 60 guaranteed. I hope they don't franchise tag him. He's allowed to go get that somewhere else. And let me tell you, that was offensive to a lot of people in Chiefs Kingdom. And I get it. We cheer for the logo on the side of the helmet and the name on the front, not the name on the back. When a player leaves this team, we're Chiefs fans. That's who we side with. That's where our loyalty sides. It's not with the player. And I'm the same way. But that being said, on a personal level, there's nobody in the world who has been through more in their life, who's overcame more in their life. And for him to have an opportunity to get generational, life-changing money. Yeah, okay, the salary tag is 1 year, $19 million. That's generational. That is, I'm not stupid. That's more money than I'll ever see. Then hopefully you guys see that money someday. I won't ever see it. And that's life-changing money. But let's not pretend that $19 million and $80 million are the same thing, right? And that they're not going to offer different opportunities for a family and somebody's life. And the idea that I say that I hope he gets that doesn't mean that I think that Brett Veach should do that. Like, let's get that straight as well. This is all just my personal hopes for L'Jarius Sneed and his personal family. And there's a lot of people in the world who like to call themselves capitalists, and they're all about capitalism and open and a free market, until you start talking about the players having an open and a free market to go out and try to get what they're worth and get as much money as possible. And suddenly they're like, they should be happy with $19 million. Like, how dare they want something more than $19 million? Oh, I don't make $19 million. Yeah, you don't make $19 million because you can't play press man coverage against Tyreek Hill and shut him down twice in a season. Like, if you could do that, you would make $19 million, but you can't. You don't have the skill set, right? Like, I can't go on the Eras Tour and sing a 10-minute version of All Too Well pitch perfectly like Taylor Swift can, right? Like, I can't sit there with those beautiful eyes like Caleb James has on the AP draft show and just seduce half of America with my stunning good looks like Caleb James does. I don't have that gorgeous smile that Kramer Sansone has. Like, I'm an ugly human being, and I've come to grips with it.
No, you're not, Rocket. Stop.
I just want L'Jarius Sneed to be as successful as possible. Caleb, what's your take on the L'Jarius Sneed situation?
No, man, I like that you brought up like some of the stuff with his backstory, some of that stuff. I wish the Chiefs would pay him, just because I think it sets a good example and sets the tone for how things go in the organization in general. Like, he came in, he hasn't said a word, you know, about any sort of contracts to the media. He's kept all that very low key. You know, and he was a guy they drafted in the fourth round. He wasn't like highly, you know, he wasn't highly touted out of Louisiana Tech by any stretch of the imagination. And through the work he did with Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt and the entire coaching staff, you know, he turned himself into what should have been an all-pro corner. You mentioned him locking up not just Tyreek, but he's locking up everyone, you know, any receiver that they've sent his way. And if you just think about like the message the Chiefs want to send, you know, I get the feeling that sometimes they've like put off the message like, oh, we're not paying anyone unless you're like Mahomes or Kelsey, or if you're like the all world guy. But I do think at some point they do have to start bringing back some of their in-house options, right? They do have to start bringing some of these guys back to like let these guys know, you know, you will be rewarded eventually for doing the right thing. You know, the franchise tag is going to benefit the team more than anything. It's not going to benefit L'Jarius Sneed, the individual, though. And he's still going to make a lot of money off of the tag, but it's not, like you said, the generational wealth that he's going to be able to pass down to his family and be able to set them up for the rest of their lives also. So, I mean, it's definitely a tough situation. I know we all want to see Sneed back in the uniform, but I do agree with what you're saying, Rocky, that if they're not going to make a long-term commitment to him, you know, it's a dangerous sport. It's a violent sport. It could be, you know, one play, and then he may never be the same cat ever again after that. So, I mean, I'm all for it, man. I want to see all those guys get paid the best they can.
I've been in the camp though with L'Jarius Sneed this entire time. Like, I want this guy to either get paid somewhere or get brought back to the Chiefs, because this guy's done so much for this team. I mean, Caleb said he's locking down people. Granted, I know his penalties were up, but were those guys scoring touchdowns still? No, they were. He was. But that's why you have an awesome defense put around L'Jarius Sneed. They didn't even score points, or it was a field goal. It's like, that's why this defense was so good. It started because of a guy like L'Jarius Sneed being a game record in the secondary.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you talk about the penalties, but I think that Steve Spagnuolo, he said it multiple times, he's spot on. It's just the cost of doing business. When you're lining somebody up against their following around number one wide receivers week after week after week, and you're playing press man coverage, his timing is off sometimes, and he misses with his strike, or his hands get a little high, or he gets a little grabby downfield. But those are all things that you live with and that you would rather have him do. Would you rather have him get a holding penalty or give up a 50-yard touchdown pass? Like, that's you live with that. It's the cost of doing business. Don't you think, Caleb, are the penalties a concern for you whatsoever when it comes to Sneed?
For me, not so much. There's never been a harder time in football to play defensive back than there is right now, because the game's been changed from, you know, just a rule standpoint to want to benefit the offenses and the quarterbacks. These guys, I mean, playing corner in the NFL is ridiculously hard. That's why, you know, you're going to see if he gets, you know, if he doesn't get tagged, you're going to see a giant number thrown out there. Like, you'll take a 15-yard penalty to keep the six off the board, to keep that explosive play off the board, because it is hard, man. 20 years ago, you know, those guys didn't have to deal with the kind of rules that these guys in the secondary do now. I mean, you can't even really – I mean, they can't even have people in the secondary who, like, lay fear into people. Like, I would like to see, like, 20 years ago, L'Jarius Sneed probably be a guy in the middle of the field you don't want to cross on any given play, especially when he's in the slot there and you got some of those smaller guys coming through there. So, like, man, y'all said, it's the price of doing business. But, I mean, if you're not giving up the big play, if you're consistently frustrating a guy, because you got to remember also, when those guys are sitting there and he's holding them, that's still frustrating to those guys because they want to be catching the ball. That's where they make their money at. You know, they're not getting paid to be, you know, have Sneed grab a hold of them and not get anything. And if the ref throws the flag, he throws the flag.
That's a great point. Listen, those wide receivers, you want to get in their head. Like, holding penalties will still get in a wide receiver's head because a 10-yard penalty doesn't show up on their stat sheet. Like there, nobody has a bonus for accumulating 10 holding penalties in a season. No, they get it for going over 1,000 yards or X number of touchdowns, right? And so wide receivers don't want you to hold them, you know, and so you're definitely getting in their head. That's a great, great point, Caleb. And you've brought up what we kind of talked about last week of why we thought that this Chiefs defense this past year was an all-time defense, is because never before has it been harder to stop the passing game and to play defense in the NFL, especially at cornerback, where it's such a reactionary position. Everything you're doing is reactionary, right? Like, you have an idea what they're going to do, but you don't really know until the play starts, you know, I mean, and you're just reacting to it. I mean, I'm 100% with you. What do you think, Graham?
Heck, I'm 100% with you too. I love Sneed, man. This guy has done so much for this Chiefs defense without him actually being. It's funny with him though, because he's more of a talker on the field and outside. He's like, he's just smooth, chill, cool as can be. And you wouldn't know he has that mentality until you see him out in the field. And I mean, he brings it. He brings it. So whatever Sneed's gonna get gets. Assuming he's going to get paid, I'm hoping he gets paid. He deserves it.
Talking about him getting paid, like, something that kind of ties into that a little bit, is the salary cap actually went up, you know, this past week. It's more than we anticipated that it would be. It's up to $255.4 million, the highest it's ever been in the NFL, which actually is good for the Chiefs because they have an estimated a little bit over $28 million in salary cap. And so if you're looking to re-sign a guy like L'Jarius Sneed or to sign Chris Jones, obviously you still think they may still convert some of Mahomes' money into a bonus and maybe extend him to kind of free up some cash. And there's a lot of things you can do that. But the Chiefs' ability to re-sign these guys just got better with that number. I think if you're ever at One Arrowhead Drive, that's a number that you really like to see come out of the NFL this past week. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so oh, yeah.
No, there's no reason for everyone's going to agree with this because you actually have the capability. If you wanted to sign Snead or to sign Jones, you have that capability right now. I mean, granted, you have to have restructure some things, but you have more wiggle room. That's what you need is wiggle room.
Yeah. And with the cap going up like it is, I'm starting to wonder if we're starting to see some of the impact from like legalized sports wagering and all that stuff from DraftKings starting to kind of creep its way into like the actual forefront of like the teams and everything. Be nice if in Missouri you could do that. That might possibly help things out. But, you know, I know there's probably a lot of salty 49ers fans that made some dumb money line bets out there here a few weeks ago. And now the, they're starting to get some of that money back.
Oh, 100%. And I'm a fan of 49ers fans making stupid bets. 49ers fans, Raiders fans, let them all just make the stupidest bets on the face of the planet. Because I don't know if you guys heard this or not, Kramer Sansone, our resident Raiders fan.
What's going on?
Oh, Antonio Pierce has Jordan rules for Mahomes that are suddenly going to work because of one Christmas Day game that they won when the Chiefs played the worst possible game that they've ever played, and the Chiefs team.
I think
it's going to be completely different next year. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
I think the Chiefs need to thank the Raiders for that.
The Chiefs need to thank the Raiders for their Jordan rules.
Yeah.
Explained.
I mean, if you go back to Christmas Day, I think the Chiefs need to thank them because that was their last loss of the entire year. If it wasn't for that loss, then the Chiefs probably, presumably, wouldn't win the Super Bowl. There's no other logic to think that way. Can we just get one thank you?
You can't get a thank you. I think the Chiefs woke up.
We let them use our practice facility too.
I think that the Chiefs like it was like a night after like being out too late on the town and drinking too much. The Chiefs woke up the next day and they were like, "What the f?
Too much eggnog on Christmas Eve."
Yeah, what did I do last night? Like, oh, I'm never doing that again. And then they decided to never do that again and win the Super Bowl. Caleb, should we be thanking the Raiders for us playing horribly on Christmas?
I don't know if it was anything the Raiders did more so it was what the Chiefs didn't do. I was at the game on Christmas, you know, could have gone to the family function. No, blew that off, went to Arrowhead with the boys. And I don't know, man, that was just like, I'd never seen the Chiefs body language like it was that day. And they still had a chance to win late in the game, like they tend to do with Mahomes. My big thing with the Raiders saying they've got the rules now for beating Mahomes, I'm like, well, that's kind of what has always happened when the Chiefs have struggled or lost games. Teams are going to get after him. They're going to lay a little extra contact on him at the end there. The Ravens were doing that in the AFC title game. It just didn't work out so well, and they got flagged for it. If you're going to just go out and say, yeah, we're going to use this rules on Mahomes, I don't know if I would have done that if I were them, because now – you know, Andy Reid's going to be coming up before the game they play next year. And he's going to be like, you want to maybe watch these late flags. They might be trying to hit our guy. And it could possibly lead to more penalties for the Chiefs. But, I mean, if that's the Raiders' cost of doing business, we'll take that.
100%. And we'll move on because, as I've said before, this is not a Raiders podcast. We're not going to give the Raiders any more play, especially any positive play. I'll be dead in the ground before this is a podcast where we start saying good things about the Raiders. So, Kramer, there you go. That was your little Raiders nugget. Enough. Calm down over there. You know, you're getting a little too hot and bothered, you know, because we talked about the Raiders for 20 seconds. So the Chiefs did sign a couple of guys this week. They signed safety Tyree Gillespie and the punk god Matt Araiza. Obviously, he's kind of a polarizing figure a little bit. Had a legal situation where it ended up being dismissed. But speaking from a talent standpoint, the guy's got some juice in his foot, right? Like he's got a booming leg, and with Tommy Townsend being a free agent and presumably looking for top of market money. Basically, this seems like they're bringing in another guy to to basically say, Tommy, we don't need to pay you top of market money. We'll go another direction if we have to. Am I off on that? That kind of seems like what this is.
I agree, man. And you know, Tommy, his representation is Drew Rosenhaus and those guys. I don't know if maybe the Chiefs kind of already know what they're getting into just from the Tyreek deal. But I just, in my head, to me, it's probably Veach was like, it's probably not worth our time to even get into negotiations with you. Like, we have other things we have to get buttoned up and taken care of. And, you know, with the situation that Arizen was in, they're going to get him for probably a fairly cheap contract, is probably his cheapest league minimum that he can get. And you talk about a guy with all the talent in the world, you know, and how big were the Chiefs special teams this year? My only thing is, I don't know if there's ever been any like records of him being a holder or anything. I'm kind of curious to see what they'll end up doing with that. You know, that's like the most minutia detail we could possibly come up with for this time of year. I don't know if they can get him with Dustin Colquitt this offseason, have him learn a thing or two maybe. But that will be, you know, probably something to monitor as we get into training camp. But dude's got a leg, man.
I love this guy. Like the punt god, he's got a rocket strapped to his hip. If you thought that Tommy Townsend could boom it, he can too. And what I am concerned about too is what's going to happen on the extra points, the field goal attempts, who's going to hold it and whatnot. Because as a special teamer, I know that's all psychological stuff. So I'm curious if Butker can get through with that. If Winchester does come back as the long snapper, he's still a free agent too. So I'm concerned about that part, but I love this dude. And I love pickup, also giving another second chance. Like, that's what the Chiefs do. They give out second chances. He's going to run away with this one, and he's going to be the punt god for the Chiefs.
Oh, man, if he kicks an 80-yarder in the Super Bowl next year, like, Chiefs fans, Chiefs fans just might, you know, build a statue outside the stadium based upon one punt in the Super Bowl. Let's be honest.
I cannot wait to see him kick in Denver this year. We could have some sort of record-breaking type deal going down there.
99-yard punt in Denver.
All right. Got to have some wind with that one, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so moving on. The Dolphins also cut a couple of players this week. Some Chiefs alumnus. Emmanuel Ogba still had a little bit of juice this last year. He had like 5 sacks, I think, this past season. He was a cap casualty, as well as Xavien Howard, the former 10 interception in one season guy who has been injured the last couple of years. Caleb, should the Chiefs kick the tires on either one of these guys, consider bringing them in, seeing what they have left in the tank, or do we feel like they're pretty much toast at this point?
I wouldn't go with Howard just because I like what the Chiefs are doing with the secondary. I think that their safety room, even though they could lose Mike Edwards, you know, I still like what they're doing. You saw Chamari Connor emerge in the playoffs a little bit. With Ogba, I do feel a little bit differently, though, just because the Chiefs, like, they literally don't have bodies at defensive end or defensive line. They've got a lot of pending free agents. If it was someone, you know, a situation where they can make the number work, you're going to have a guy with a lot of NFL experience in the Spag system. I don't see why that wouldn't work out because, you know, he'd be just another good, you know, he's not going to be an every down player, but he'd be just another quality depth piece to have up there.
Yeah, especially I think with a Minshew missing the start of the season, right? You know, his contract kind of being up in the air a little bit. He seems like he'd be a good rotational piece. Kramer, what's your take on it? What are you thinking?
I'm not good with Xavien Howard. Injuries, older, slower now. I'm fine. Ogba, though, is the interesting one because he's been here before and he knows the system. I wouldn't say all the way well, but you know what? It doesn't take too long to learn specs, especially if you're a defensive tackle. Go block that, stuff the run, get to the quarterback, do what you need to do, do your job. They need bodies. Like, that's the Chiefs need a defensive tackle presence. And, I mean, I'm not saying if Chris Jones is going to be there or not. I mean, if I wouldn't want your backup to be Emmanuel Ogba and you sign him, now he's going to be number one. No, you need to have a rotation of guys. Adding Ogba to this rotation, and if you also get Chris Jones back as well, that defensive tackle room is just going to be absolutely fantastic for the Chiefs.
Awesome. Yeah.
So go get him. Go get him.
Go get him. All right. You have the Veach season seal of approval. Brett, if you're, I know you're listening and you're watching out there and you're kind of wondering what to do with Emmanuel Ogba. Well, you have it here. We approve. So go ahead and go out and bring him in. Moving forward, switching gears a little bit. Let's talk draft, guys. This is a primarily it's an off-season podcast in general, but we talk a lot of draft here. And one of the biggest events of the draft, arguably the biggest event other than the draft itself, is the NFL Combine. Historically, the NFL Combine was created as a way to come in and get medicals on guys, right? Like back in the day, like you really, before the advent of the internet and everything, there wasn't a lot of information out there about these players, and teams wanted to see these guys firsthand. They wanted to get their measurements, look them over, make sure they were healthy before they drafted them. And that's kind of why you had the combine originally. It was originally a medical event, and then they had the testing that they added in as well. Now, these days, with the internet and with so much information, the testing plays a huge part into it these days. We know that. But also, let's be honest, college teams lie about medicals a lot. A lot of players play injured. A lot of guys don't have they add 3 inches to their height, 15 pounds to their weight. You know, team like there isn't a required injury report in college football. So, you know, for instance, there was that guy with Ole Miss last year, Trey Harris III. He had a knee injury and then he played the next week. Like he had knee surgery and then played the next week. And it was never actually, I searched high and low. I never saw any report that actually listed what the actual injury was other than just general knee injury and surgery. Like, you know, so that's kind of what you're walking into with a lot of these guys who play college football. So the NFL teams want to get them in there. They want to get their doctors with eyes on them. And then they want to get actual measurements on these guys. Now, one thing I do take a little bit of umbrage with is the weigh-ins and the weight that's put on the weigh-ins at the combine. Last year, you saw Bryce Young, the first overall pick. It was a big deal. He weighed in at what, like 204 pounds? Like, oh, he hit that 204 pound marker because he was 5'10". And everybody knows he played at 185 ish. Like he's a 185 pound guy. He's 5'10", 185. You watch him on tape. That's how he plays. That's what he looks like. You watched him with the Panthers this year. That's how he played. That's what he looks like. I don't give two craps if he came in fatter at the combine, stood on a scale, hit 204, and then didn't actually work out because he was at it, because he weighed too much. He weighed more. He was going to bring down his 40 time or whatever. Like, no team cares what you weigh at for the most part. They're not weighing you in before games to say, hey, this is what you weigh. Oh, wow, cut 20 pounds, put on 10 pounds. I don't know if you're going to be able to play at this weight. Like there's rare cases where, like, maybe a guy like a Mekhi Becton or something like that is coming in weighing 360 or whatever it was that he was weighing, or a DeJuan Jones where a team might say, like, hey, man, maybe you wouldn't get injured as much if you weighed a little bit less, right? Like, the team doctors might be saying that. But in general, like, nobody's weighing Travis Kelce to see how much Travis Kelce weighs during the season, right? You know, it doesn't matter. What you weigh at the combine is what they put on your back of your football card until you're 40. You know, like, it's such an arbitrary number that it's one of the few things that really sticks, like, really, really puts a craw in my saddle that so much weight is put into, like, how much a guy weighs at the combine. Am I just being too much of, like, a crotchety old man who is just getting annoyed by stupid stuff, or is it actually dumb that people put any credence into these weigh-ins?
I mean, I do think it is dumb in some regards, because you're going to have some offensive linemen or D linemen, they're just going to, like, not eat for 2 weeks. They're going to eat like one meal a day, and they're going to come in 20 pounds lighter, and their weight's going to fluctuate back up. Look, the fact that Orlando Brown Jr. got to get away with saying he was like 340 on the roster was criminal for a long time. That guy ain't been 340 since eighth grade. So that's what I'm saying. It's like you said, bro, but it's like the, you know, like what you're saying about Bryce Young. gaining all the weight. It's like all these linemen, they're going to go in here and cut because they need to get to like 330 or get to that good number. Like, it's going to be back on them by the time they're playing, but that's also their playing weight. That's where they're comfortable at. So it's just one of those, I mean, it's just one of those weird things for measurement sakes. They just, you know, they want to get as in-depth as possible. At some point, there is such a thing as being, you know, looking through the microscope too much.
Yeah, Kramer, like it's like, what's your take on this? I feel like you're probably on the side of where you're like, oh, well, Bryce Young was just improving his draft stock and doing what he had to do for himself.
I don't care about how much you weigh. I don't care what your height is. What I honestly care less what your 40 time is at times. I need to see the game tape, people. Like, I do. No, but if I'm looking at this, I'm not worried about the weight. I'm just not. If I'm looking at something that is also a part of this, of the draft combine, I'm looking at the bench press. I am looking at the 40. I am looking at the three cone. That's all I'm looking at. That's all I want to see out of your measurables, if that's the thing that you want to gauge that for. Get this weight stuff out of here. Now, if you are over 370, that might be a problem, but.
But does it actually matter? Like, if you play at 370 and you're comfortable at 370 and you're a road grader at 370 and you move well enough to get out and block in space at 370,
but we already know the longevity of a person who is 370. Probably, I mean, we really haven't really seen him in the NFL. Like, maybe this was like in the early on in the years, like before my time, even before I was even born, probably. But we're not really seeing that now. There's more of a leaner build to people.
I mean, looking at Orlando Brown Jr., I guarantee you he's somewhere around 370. And that's the whole thing, is we're like the longevity. It's guys in the NFL who weigh that much who are playing at that weight. Like, it's like Caleb said. It's your playing weight, you know? But kind of like Costco, kind of piggybacking on what you said, Kramer, like, how much stock should we actually put into combine performances? You know, like how important is how fast a guy can run in a straight line in underwear versus how fast he runs with the ball in his hand and tape on tape, right? Like, how, like does it matter if a guy can jump 42 inches in the air like Chris Conley did at the combine if he can't win a contested catch, you know? So, like, I don't know, Caleb, like how much stock do you put into the combine performances versus a guy?
You know, you got to just find the meshing point between all of them, because there are things, you know, for certain positions you want to look at. For O-line and D-line, my favorite thing to look at for them is going to probably be the vertical jump and the broad jump, because that's going to show the explosion through their hips, and that's going to show how explosive a guy can be off of the snap. I think those are extremely important. I think that gets underlooked. Like, I don't care how slow a guy is the last 30 yards of his 40 who weighs 320 pounds. I want to see how explosive he can be for five steps or for 5 yards or getting up off the ground. For defensive backs, I do think a lot of that stuff does matter for the DBs. I think there's just a certain threshold they have to be able to get to even be able to compete at that league. It's kind of the same for receivers also there, but I mean, there is a reason I call the combine the underwear Olympics a lot of time, because there are guys that go in there and they're just really good at working out, and, you know, they're gonna go in there and put on a show and raise their draft stock. There's guys that aren't the greatest at working out. They're gonna go in there and you know, they're gonna go in there and fall a little bit. I see people pass around those like RAS scores, raw athletic scores, all the time. And they're like, looks like the better athletes are actually better at football. You think? I mean, that's kind of why they're good at football, is because they're a good athlete in general. So, yeah, it's going to reflect that on there. And, you know, teams are going to take chances on guys with ridiculous combine stats, because everyone thinks that they can coach, you know, they can coach the Hall of Fame inner player outside of these guys. That usually doesn't work out in the end. But, you know, like I said before, it's just finding the meshing point, man. There's good things you can take from that stuff. There's bad things you can take from it. You just got to kind of be able to, you know, sift through the information in these teams when they're making these calls on this kind of stuff. You know, they're going to revert back to, how does this guy fit our system? And do we think we can actually coach him in the end?
I 100% agree with you. And I think, like, for me personally, when I'm scouting a guy, when I'm watching a guy, I feel like the combine can be confirmation of the tape, right? Like, if the guy doesn't have the tape, but he runs his buns off at the combine, I'm probably not really moving him up my draft board too much further than he already was. But if I'm watching a guy and I'm like, this guy looks really good on tape, this guy is really productive, this guy seems like he's flying all over the field, but is it, but can he do it at the next level against the next level of competition? Does he have what it takes to continue this sort of production and to grow and keep on developing in the pros, or has he maximized what he's going to be? Well, you see a guy who had good tape and then he goes to the combine and he runs a 4.39 40 and he jumps, you know, 40 inches and you say, wow, okay, well, this guy has awesome tape and he's an awesome athlete. That tells me that he probably has what it takes to hang at the next level and to continue to grow and to continue to do better. So I always kind of feel like the value of the combine is to confirm what you already thought about the guy a little bit, you know? And so, but I mean, so I'm excited for it. I do like the combine. I think it's a fun event. It's a fun event to watch. As we move forward into this week, it starts on Thursday, February 29th, and which also February 29th, we have a February 29th this year, guys. It is a
happy 34 years.
Wow, Kramer, what are you doing for your leap year?
Going to work. Have to.
Same. What about you, Caleb? What are you doing on leap year?
I don't know. I guess just being happy we get the extra day.
Guys, be happy with every extra day you get in life. That's that. Take it from our resident film guru, Caleb James. Every day is a gift, and just be happy for every extra day you get in life. Anyway, first day of the combine, Thursday, February 29th, defensive line and linebackers. Second day, March 1st, defensive backs and tight ends. The third day is March 2nd, running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers. And then it wraps up on March 3rd with offensive linemen. Let's just kind of go day by day and kind of just talk about who to watch for, possible risers and fallers, and who the Chiefs fans should kind of keep an eye on as guys in the combine. We'll start off with you, Caleb. Who do you got in the combine at defensive line that you think the Chiefs fans should keep an eye on?
Man, I am glad that you're bringing this up because there are some mutants in this year's defensive line class. And I'm not just talking about like some of these guys like Chris Jenkins, whose nickname is actually the Mutant from Michigan. He's going to probably put on a show. But you look across the board, man. I mean, I don't think Jerzon Newton's going to participate because he had a lower – he's getting like a cleanup procedure done, so he'll probably sit out. But you go through Leonard Taylor III, you know, Mr. Double-teamed every play in the ACC, is going to get a chance to show off some of that real athleticism. You're going to have a couple of other guys in there, like the Texas guys, Murphy and Sweat. They're going to be in there. I believe they're both going to participate. And then I think a guy that could probably raise his stock quite a bit would be like a Mason Smith type. I'm going to be curious to see what he does, if some of those athletic traits, I think, you know, show up on his film, or you're going to be able to see some of that there. But, you know, this defensive line class is going to be, I think they're going to be pretty special. I've been pretty blown away with what I've seen from a lot of them so far. So it'll be fun to see all those guys out there in one setting.
Yeah. Kramer, who you got an eye on?
I'm looking, I mean, I'm a Michigan guy at heart, but my Michael Hall Jr. of Ohio State has just, he's good. He's a stud. He's a guy that you need to double team. And I think honestly, he should be a first round draft pick for some team, but he probably won't probably be in a second rounder, but he's going to do good in the NFL. I feel like
he's going to be a solid starter. I feel like he's a guy who's going to have kind of like that long, solid career in the NFL. You touched on two guys that I think the Chiefs fans should definitely keep an eye on, and Chris Jenkins and Leonard Taylor, Caleb James. I think that those guys are very much in play at 32 for the Chiefs. A guy who's probably not going to play at 32 for the Chiefs, they'd have to trade up for, is Byron Murphy, the second out of Texas. A little bit undersized, but he might be one of the strongest guys in the entire draft. Super, super powerful, quick get off. Him and Chris Jenkins were both Feldman's on the Feldman's freak list, you know. And then a guy who we're talking about, like guys whose draft stock is going to rise. And we kind of talked about these combine darlings and guys who don't necessarily have the tape to back it up, but they're going to be monsters at the combine. And you're just talking about Gabe Hall here, I think, to a T. Like, he's going to come in and put on a show at the combine. and some team is going to fall in love with him, and his draft stock is going to go way up because he's going to be strong and fast and agile. And the same also is Rook Orohoro, you know, out of Clemson. Like, that's another guy where he's just super explosive and super fast off the snap, and he looks great coming off the bus. Like, that guy looks awesome coming off the bus, and he's going to look great in a pair of shorts. And these are guys that are just going to go out there and just be super electric in the combine, and they don't necessarily have the tape to back it up, and they're not guys that I would necessarily want the Chiefs to draft anywhere in the top five rounds, like maybe sixth or seventh round, take a flyer on them for sure. But if we're talking at 32, I think that Leonard Taylor and Chris Jenkins are the guys that I'm looking at. And then also another guy who's really interesting, who I don't know if he's going to test super well, but his tape is great and he's a total gamer, and is Braden Fisk out of Florida State. Like, I'm a huge fan of his. And I think the thing that I think sticks out to me the most about him is that when Jordan Travis went down, leg injury, ACC game, everybody knew that for Florida State's hopes of being in the playoff to stay alive, they had to win that ACC championship, and they weren't going to get a lot of offense. So what does Braden Fisk go out and do? When the lights were the brightest and his team needed him the most, he went out and played the best game of his career and had a multi-sack game and was completely dominant. That game will stick with me throughout this entire draft process. When I think about a guy who I want on the Chiefs, it's a guy like Chris Jones, where when you need him the most, he's going to come in and take over a 10 snap streak and just shut down the other team and get you the ball back so that you can go and do something with it and win the game. So before we move off of defensive linemen, though, anybody else, either one of you guys want to hit on?
I think you summed it up pretty good in there. I do wish Newton was going to show us something, because he is, you know, he's a stud, man. I don't know how he's been falling down some of these draft boards. I know he's got maybe the foot issue. It doesn't sound like it's that serious of a thing, but I'm like, man, his pass rush moves are extremely advanced for being a college defensive tackle.
You know, and that's actually – so Newton is a guy where if he's in the 20s, I think the Chiefs should trade up and get him. It's funny because I feel like we talked, like a lot of draft analysts, we feel like take themselves too seriously. I also feel like a lot of draft analysts fail to link point A and point B together. Sometimes they're like, oh wow, Jerzon Newton's falling down my draft board because his production fell off towards the end of the season. He wasn't quite the same player in the second half of the season as he was the first half of the season. And then in the same breath, they say, and he's rehabbing a Lisfranc injury in his foot, and he should be good to go by the start of the year. Well, his production fell off. The guy had a broken foot. Like, the guy's out there playing through a broken foot, and you're saying he's falling down your draft board because his production went down. Like, okay, like, he is the guy who was super productive last year and who was utterly dominant the first half of this year. And so,
right, man. And it's also like they double team people too. That's kind of why like Leonard Taylor hasn't gotten much run. He's got very low production numbers. There's plays where he's got three offensive linemen touching him, or he's got two O-linemen double teaming him, and the backs coming in to help chip on him also. It's like those dudes in the ACC, they knew before everyone else's. I don't know, man. I think evaluating D-line and O-line is hard now just because of the way offenses and defenses are structured in college football nowadays. It's hard to kind of evaluate some of those guys, but you can tell the amount of respect that some of these guys got why they should probably be drafted where they are.
Oh, 100%. Shifting forward to the linebackers, Kramer, who do you got? Who should we keep an eye on in linebackers?
I don't know if the Chiefs necessarily need this guy, but I feel like he needs to be in every single linebacker's room out there. And that's going into Missouri, Tyron Hopper. Like, I think this guy, he's going to shoot up a lot of boards. I don't know, because he's tall. He's tall for a linebacker size, and about 230. I mean, this is like Nick Bolton-esque, but a bigger version of him. I like this guy a lot. And the fact he's also come from out of Mizzou as well, kind of gives me more of that flavor-esque of what Nick Bolton was when he was in college as well. But, man, I feel like he's going to start flying off the boards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And obviously Chiefs fans are always going to love it whenever you get a local Mizzou guy in there. And we've had pretty good luck with drafting Mizzou linebackers. And so, I'd always be, even though I'm a KU Jayhawk fan, I like it when the Chiefs draft Mizzou guys just because just keep the local guys in. Bring in as many local guys as possible because I honestly do feel like they play harder when you end up getting drafted by a local team. Caleb, what linebacker has struck your fancy recently?
I was watching some of the top guys here not too long ago. I think Edgerrin Cooper from A&M, he's probably going to have a real solid day. Peyton Wilson from NC State is probably going to put on a show and probably end up being one of the more highly athletic rated guys in the class. So, you know, those would be a couple of guys to keep an eye on. I'll be keeping an eye on Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I've had some questions a little bit with some of the film study. Maybe I'm just evaluating it too hard, but I will be curious to see what his actual testing numbers look like.
Yeah. And with Jeremiah Trotter Jr., he also has a little bit of size concern too. Like, he's not the biggest guy. And so whether or not he can hold up at the NFL level. With Peyton Wilson, like, he is definitely a freak of nature when it comes to being an athlete. Obviously, the big thing with him is, can he hold up? Can his medicals hold up, right? He has a huge injury history, missed a lot of time. But I listened to an interview with him recently where he said that basically he has overhauled his entire, like diet, his workout, his health regimen, everything, that he's learned how to take care of his body, and he's was able to identify kind of like the problem issues that he was having that was leading to multiple injuries. And obviously it's before the draft, so he's going to say this because he's trying to convince teams that he can hold up, but he seems pretty convinced that he had kind of unlocked the solution to staying healthy and being able to stay on the football field. And if that's the case, then yeah, the guy is a borderline first rounder and a guy, because all he does is fly around the football field and make plays. Junior Colson out of Michigan, he's Dane Brugler's number one linebacker that he has, and I see why. The guy was the heart of Michigan's defense, and they went undefeated and won the national championship. Like the guy can kind of do it all. He can rush the quarterback if you need him to. He can drop back into coverage. He's big enough to hold up. Like, he's athletic enough. Like, there's a lot to like about Junior Colson. And then besides that, a guy that Chiefs fans are going to love that's going to be kind of a later round pick is JD Bertrand out of Notre Dame. He's not a top three round pick, maybe fourth, fifth round guy, but he's that guy who, where you talk to any one of his coaches and they're like, he's a coach on the football field. He's the ultimate motivator. He's the ultimate leader. And when you listen to Jim Nagy, the director of the Senior Bowl talk, he said that JD Bertrand was out there at every single practice encouraging on every linebacker on every single rep, and then taking guys aside and kind of talking them through their reps and like saying like, hey, this is what you did, this is what I saw, like almost like even like coaching up like his fellow competitors at the Senior Bowl. So I don't think he's going to be the best tester, but that's definitely a guy that I think that Chiefs fans would like fall in love with. Just he'd be their camp crush, you know, if he somehow ends up in a Chiefs uniform. Moving forward to day two though, defensive backs and tight ends. So we don't know what's going to happen with Jarius Sneed. We don't know what's going to happen with the safety room, right? Like, Brian Cook's coming back from an injury. We're losing Mike Edwards. Are they going to carry Justin Reed's, you know, full salary, you know, I think they will. I think Justin Reed is definitely back, but I mean, there's some questions, you know, necessarily in the secondary where the Chiefs could possibly look to bring in another body. And then at tight end, we got to start thinking about life after Travis Kelce. Like, that's just a simple fact. So, Caleb, what are your thoughts on the defensive backs and tight ends?
I think there's definitely a lot of interesting names in both spots. I don't know if it's going to be something the Chiefs would address early or later. You know, sticking with Mizzou, Ennis Rankinstraw, he is going to probably be one of the better corners. I believe he's probably going to be a first-round pick. He'll be a guy to keep an eye on. And then for tight ends, obviously, you know, Jatavion Sanders from Texas, he's going to draw a lot of the attention. I don't know if the Chiefs will want to go that route early on, but a later round guy, maybe keep an eye on, maybe like a possible Blake Bell type replacement would be AJ Barner from Michigan. You know, he's a good blocking tight end. He didn't really have like a ton of college production, but I think from what I saw when he was, you know, he's got solid hands, but I think he'd be like a good blocking option. Cade Stover could also be a blocking option type tight end. He may go a little too high. That may be like a late day three pickup the Chiefs would be interested in making.
Yeah, I like those names. The Ennis Rankinstraw, he is going to probably go in the first round, but I mean the guy is definitely a baller. I'm a big fan of him. Kramer, what do you got? What do you got for defensive backs and tight ends? Like, where's your head at on this?
The two dudes that on defensive backs that I just like, one, I can't get Kool-Aid McKinstry in my head. And I don't know if it's because of the name or the fact that like he could be a smaller version of PS2 possibly. There's just something about him that I like. It might just be the name in general. But other guys such as like Max Melton of Rutgers, he's a guy that might be interesting to take a look at. But on the offensive side of things for the tight ends, I mean, everybody wants Brock Bowers. That's number one guy. But there's no way the Chiefs could possibly get to Brock Bowers unless he falls away down to 32, which that won't definitely happen. But Eric All out of Iowa, he's a good pass blocking kind of guy, run blocking as well. He can also catch a handful of catches out there for you. So if you needed him, he might be also your Blake Bell esque type of guy if you're looking for that too. So that's also another tight end you could look at.
And speaking of like the secondary with safeties, this is a guy that's probably going to – he had to be a second-round pick at the lowest. He might even go top, like, end of the first round. Is Tyler Newbin – safety Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota is just that, like, Swiss Army knife playmaker. You could line him up in the slot. You can line him up in the box. You can play him on the back end. The guy plays all over. The guy flies to the ball. He's just a complete playmaker in the secondary. Not quite to the level that a Cooper DeJean from Iowa is. Like, Cooper DeJean from Iowa might be one of the best athletes in the entire draft, right? If he didn't break his foot, he's probably a lock for a top 10 pick. But I think Tyler Newbin, safety out of Minnesota, is definitely a very interesting name to keep an eye on. And then for tight end, a guy that I like a lot that doesn't get much talk is Jaheim Bell from Florida State. Now, he didn't really fit into their offense too great because they already had Johnny Wilson, who's essentially a big slot, right? Like, he's a 6'6" guy who doesn't move great, who attacks the seams, right? And that's the exact same skill set that Jaheim Bell had. So he's kind of fighting Wilson for targets this year. But prior to that, he was at South Carolina. And at South Carolina, they lined him up all over the field. They lined him up in the backfield. I think he had like 340 yards rushing and like four touchdowns, you know, in 2022 at South Carolina, something like that. And so he's a guy who's just an offensive weapon. He's not going to be an inline blocker for you by any means. Like, he's a guy who you're going to put in a big slot. You're going to stretch the field with, you're going to send him on some wide shallow crosses. You might be able to hit him on a handoff or two. He's definitely much more of a, what's the name I'm looking for? Who's the guy that got drafted by who plays for Atlanta? Who used to be a first round draft pick wide receiver out of Minnesota. I'm drawing a blank right now. Played for the Pats also, wide receiver, converted to running back for the Falcons.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Patterson. That's one. So Jaheim Bell reminds me a lot of Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Like, that's like you want to see a play style type of guy. Like, that's who I think Jaheim Bell is a lot like, and he's going to go later in the draft. He's projected to go somewhere in the 180s. I think right now, like, and so he's going to test well though. So he's an interesting name to keep an eye on. Going into Saturday, March 2nd, we're not going to talk about quarterbacks as far as Chiefs fans to keep an eye on. We'll talk about quarterbacks at some point on this podcast leading up to the draft. But we don't need to draft. We don't need to draft a quarterback for 10 more years. So we're not going to waste a lot of time on it today. But talking about running backs and wide receivers, there's a whole lot. I mean, obviously, this is an extremely deep, deep draft at wide receiver, and there's a lot of interesting names at running back. Who are some running backs that you think the Chiefs fans should keep their eyes on? And who, and as far as wide receiver, even a bit further, is what do you think the Chiefs should do at wide receiver, and who's somebody you want to see them target at wide receiver, Caleb?
I definitely think they have to take at least one, if not two, receivers in the draft this year. But in the same breath, they also kind of need to replenish the running back room, which I think they should probably look to take the receivers more early on, because I do think there's a little bit of talent towards the back end of the draft at running back. I like Adonai Mitchell from Texas. He's been a guy. I just kind of like the athletic build. It's, you know, something they've, you know, it's something they've been needing. Troy Franklin, his name's been popping up a lot lately also. I've been kind of liking what I've seen from him. I think that he would kind of fit some of the speed profiles and Andy Reid's that wants in his offense, but he's also kind of got that bigger build for what they've been kind of experimenting with for a few years now, kind of trying to change up how they go in there. Those are a couple of guys I'd be keeping an eye on the end of day one. And then for running backs, you know, if they go in there late, I'd say this guy doesn't really fit in Andy Reid running back profile, but I do like his film a lot. That's Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. Dude's like 6'2", 240. He's a load, but he can catch the ball. He can move well in space. I mean, that would be kind of – he'd be like a changeup from what the Chiefs usually, you know, from what they have now. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that if they get into a game where, you know, teams are starting to take away the pass, they're not having as much success, they can line up and just pound people with him all game long. He'd be like a nice 1-2 combo with Pacheco in there.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like Braylon Allen would be the thunder to the lightning, right? You know, like Pacheco runs hard, but he's not a powerful back. I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have about Pacheco is he doesn't run with a lot of power. He runs with a lot of anger, but there's a difference there. Kramer, what do you want to see them do at running back and wide receiver, and who's some guys to keep their eye on?
Wide receiver, we'll start off there. If it's not Ladd McConkey, then I don't know who's it going to
Not get me started on Ladd freaking McConkey today, Kramer Sansone.
If Brian Thomas Jr. is there in the first round, I think you need to go get that guy. 6'4", wide receiver, that can be your true X that you definitely need for your team. I think that he might be the best, if not around that area where the Chiefs are picking. I hope he's there for them. Even Xavier Worthy as well. He's a leaner guy out of Texas. Might have some Zay Flowers in him. I know that's I'm happy that the Chargers didn't get Zay Flowers last year. But a thinner guy, some speed, great hands, perfect for them. And running back, the only guy I can think – if he is there in maybe the round three or round four, Blake Corm, he out of Michigan, he finds the end zone. He got a touchdown every single game last year, every single game that I watched, and he scored every touchdown every game this past year. So you need a guy to get in the end zone. He's powerful, got a good waist on him, good thick thighs. Yeah, Blake Corm should be the Chiefs' go-to guy in either the third or the fourth.
I mean, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but you can't argue with the production. And the thing is that he's, when you say he's not the biggest guy in the world, what you mean is he's short. He's powerful, but he's short, right? You know, he's like, but you know what? You know who else was like that? I am just drawing blanks on names today.
MJD, oh, Bruce Jones, Drew.
Yeah, there we go.
I think we're on the same wavelength right now.
You read my mind. Maurice Jones, Drew. That's who I see when I think of Blake Corum. And Blake Corum just splits defenders. He's shiftier than he looks. I'm a big fan of Blake Corum. Myself, personally, you said Brian Thomas Jr. I think that that's my number one target for the Chiefs at wide receiver. They're going to have to trade up for him, though. But I honestly, I like Brian Thomas Jr. enough, and I'm all in on the idea of a three-peat that I think I would trade next year's one to move up and get Brian Thomas Jr. I say you don't trade future round draft picks unless you're moving up to get a quarterback, but we have the quarterback. The Chiefs trading up is different than any other team in the NFL having to trade up. And the Chiefs selling out for a title next year is different than any other team selling out for a title, because they're trying to do something that no other team has ever done in the history of the NFL, right? And so for that reason, I would trade next year's number one pick if it meant me being able to trade up into the teens and get Brian Thomas Jr. Now, if they're not going to do that and they're going to stay pat, a guy I think I do like, Adonai Mitchell, a little bit better than Xavier Worthy at Texas. I think he runs a little bit cleaner routes. I think that he's a little bit more agile. He comes in and out of his breaks a little bit cleaner. Other guys that I think the Chiefs should keep their eye on in the second round is Brendan Rice out of USC. You want to talk about a guy who is Patrick friendly? Like, if you want to, like if you want to talk about somebody who played college football, now he's not Patrick Mahomes. He'll never be Patrick Mahomes. But the style of football that the guy plays, as far as bailing on the pocket, extending plays, it's Caleb Williams, and that's exactly what Brendan Rice. I'd probably say I watched every single touchdown, every single catch that Brendan Rice had this year. I'd say probably at least 60% of his receptions came after the play broke down, and he went and found the open space and made himself available, you know, which is exactly what you need out of a wide receiver. And then it doesn't hurt that Jerry Rice is his dad, right? Like that helps that his dad is the greatest wide receiver of all time. A dark horse guy that the Chiefs fans should keep their eye on is Jermaine Burton out of Alabama. Alabama doesn't do their wide receivers any favors. They spread the ball around too much. They run the ball. They like to play ball control and lean on their defense. But given the opportunity, Jermaine Burton was a complete baller. The guy runs awesome routes. He's explosive. He's very subtle in he's very subtle in gearing down and then breaking away and then pitting into another gear. He's an electric athlete. He does come with off-field baggage. There was an incident last year where he was walking off the field. He said he was scared, but Tennessee fans ran on the field, and when he was going off the field, he pushed a female Tennessee fan in the face with his hand, kind of like hit and pushed her as she walked away. So he'll have to answer questions about that and convince teams that they can feel comfortable in drafting him. But from a purely football standpoint, the guy's amazing. Caleb, any of those guys sound interesting to you from a wide receiver standpoint?
Yeah, I've been watching Burton for a couple of years now, even before he, transferred to Bama. My thing with him is he does have that explosion, you know, and the ability to line up. I think he'd be who Chiefs fans really wanted Sky Moore to be more than anything in the Chiefs offense right now. I know all that stuff with the off-field stuff is going to cause him to fall, and then just like, the production numbers aren't there, but he could end up being one of those guys that, you know, you're looking back in 3 or 4 years and go, how did this guy make it to day three? Because he's putting up ridiculous seasons all over the place.
Oh, 100%. And speaking of people who Chiefs fans want Sky Moore to be, I think Roman Wilson is another one of those guys. Like, he was producing like wildfire. And then around the time that Jim Harbaugh got in trouble, they stopped throwing the ball and just started running the ball. And up until then, he was producing like crazy. He still ended the season with 11 touchdowns. And we talk about the opposite of the whole Jermaine Burton concerns. Roman Wilson in high school, he grew up in Hawaii, so he could play football. His dad was a pilot for an airline, and so he would go to the airport every single day and fly standby so that he could fly to the next island over, go to school, go to football practice, and then come back home at the end of the day. Like, the guy like flew standby just so he could get to football practice and play football. He's a guy who loves football. So Roman Wilson is another guy. We'll wrap this up soon with, we'll wrap it up real quick with offensive linemen. Chiefs need to find a left tackle. I feel like they've been playing this game at left tackle a little bit too much. These 1 year contracts with Donovan Smith. Should the Chiefs consider drafting a tackle at 32? If not, who's a mid-round guy that they should have their eye on, Caleb?
I mean, with the O-line class this year, I've really not been super impressed with the tackles in general. There's guys at the top of the class who are going to be like your lottery-type picks, and they're all probably going to end up with solid careers at the professional level. I mean, if they got to a situation where they could maybe trade up, there's two guys I do like that I think they could possibly get up to. I like Talies Fuaga out of Oregon State, but he's only a right tackle, so I don't know how that would work out, but I've been impressed with him. I think he's a physical road grader. And then, you know, J.C. Latham, he's been, you know, highly touted around the kingdom for most of this draft cycle. He's very impressive, physically imposing tackle. It'd be kind of like having a more athletic version of – a more athletic, stronger version of Orlando Brown back there now. And I don't really see anywhere where they could go up and get, like, Olufoshanu, Joe Alt. I don't really see that. Those guys would be long gone by then. Really, man, with the tackle class, there's no one really even in the middle rounds that has like drawn my interest too much to where I've been like, well, we need to, you know, spend a pick on it. I think honestly for the team, they'd be better off. I mean, it's not ideal, but they'd probably be better off finding another guy to bring in to compete with Wanya Morris out of the bat and then just kind of try to roll like that. It's not ideal. But like you said, whoever they do have out there is going to be elevated by Mahomes, by the interior offensive line also. So I just – that's kind of where I've been at with that.
Yeah, it seems like, especially this year, when you're watching the offensive tackles, A, there's a dearth of right tackles and not a lot of left tackles. Even J.C. Latham hasn't played left tackle. Now, Nick Saban was on record saying, I didn't move him to left tackle because – not because he can't play left tackle, but because he was so good at right tackle. Why create a hole at right tackle by moving him to left tackle, then I have to go out and recruit a right tackle? So I just left him where I knew that we were solid and awesome, and I went out and recruited a left tackle. Whether or not you think that's coach speak or it's actually true, I'll leave that up to you. One thing is J.C. Latham is the strongest guy in this draft. He's the strongest player in this draft. And even like the top-end guys like Olu, you see a lot of guys who are – and I saw this especially with Javon Foster out of Minnesota. Like there's a – like the profile for Javon Foster, he has the length, the size. You think he should be awesome. And he's not terrible. But there's so many guys that are just strikers instead of blockers in this draft. Like they just so much – like they can't keep their hands on a guy. Like they go, a pass rusher comes at him and they strike him and kind of pop him back. But the guy just then does another move and gets around him. Like it's like, and because of that, they get so far overextended. Their balance is bad. They get out of position. Guys like Jordan Morgan are awesome, but he gets beat inside consistently. Like they're not agile enough on their feet. Or then you have a guy like Amarius Mims who hasn't ever played football. It seems like he has a great profile, but he hasn't played in 2 years, and so there is no tape on him. Like you could watch every snap that Amarius Mims played in 10 minutes. And, I mean, so how are you going to draft a guy like that in the first round? But, Kramer, I know that there's got to be somebody that you're in love with, right?
I'm not overly impressed with anybody in this offensive tackle side of things. And that's where I need to look at, too, especially if you're looking at the Chiefs, because, I mean, clearly you need a left tackle. When you were talking about Caleb, about the guy out of Oregon State, in my interest, if you are to like trade up, possibly it might be that guy, or it might be a guy like Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. I mean, he only started 5 games, but the dude's 6'7", 3" something. And if he only started 5 games, it doesn't mean he can't make a project to move him to left tackle. That's the only thing I could think of with him. Other than that, this offensive tackle class is just abysmal.
I will say, if we're looking for like a possible like mid-round project, I know we just talked about how, you know, arbitrary it is to talk about combine measurements. The Chiefs are going to measure these guys' arms, and they're going to put extensive stock into how long their tackles' arms are. So if you start going down the line and all of a sudden like a guy like Patrick Paul has the most ridiculously long arms you've ever seen in your entire life, I would maybe circle that guy as a possible, you know, Andy Heck may be getting ready to give him a seal of approval if we can figure out a way to work with it kind of deal. So that'd be something to maybe keep an eye on post-combine.
Oh, 100%. Like Patrick Paul is a guy who definitely fits that, like what the Chiefs are looking for in an offensive lineman, you know, to a T. Kingsley Sumatia is also a guy who fits that profile to a T. And like I said, Javon Foster honestly fits that profile to a T. That's my only question about Talise Fuaga out of Oregon State is, would the Chiefs even consider him? Because I'm not sure he has the requisite arm length for what Andy's looking for in an offensive tackle. Do I think that that's going to make him not be a quality tackle in the league. No, I think the guy's awesome. Do I think the Chiefs are gonna knock him because his arms are a little too short and say, oh, we would move him to inside? Maybe. Like, do the Chiefs maybe view him as the best guard in the draft instead of the best tackle and then not draft him because of that? I mean, he's going to be gone before 32 anyway, so this is all just speculation at this point, but that's my only question about Talisse Fuaga. But I'm with you. A guy like Tyler Guyton, like, he has the full profile. He has the looks. He just doesn't have the experience, we say. My concern with Tyler Guyton, and I could be wrong or whatever, when you talk to people about, oh, well, why didn't Tyler Guyton have more playing time? They say, oh, well, he was blocked by Wanya Morris last year. Okay. So we're talking about a guy to play instead of Wanya Morris, who was blocked by Wanya Morris in college, right? So instead of drafting Tyler Guyton, we should probably just give Wanya Morris a chance, you know, like, if we're going to go down that route. Like, that's my only thing with Tyler Guyton. But any last takes on any of these guys? Any other guys you guys want to get off your chest before we transition forward off of the combine? All right. So
we can talk more about Ladd McConkey if you want to, but I mean,
no, I'm fine. I'm good. I would rather literally drive a 6-inch spike through my eyeball.
Okay,
right,
Rocky.
Now.
Okay,
Rocky. On live video for everybody to see than talk about Ladd McConkey for even 2 seconds. Pick. Oh my gosh. I swear to God, I'm only ensuring that the Chiefs are going to draft Ladd McConkey at 32 because I'm talking about how I don't want them to draft Ladd McConkey at 32.
I can't wait.
Oh my gosh. So, but we're at that point in the night where we talk about our sleepers of the week. So really quick, each week moving forward, we're each going to throw out one quick sleeper of the week and make a case for why we think the Chiefs should consider these guys. I'll start off. My guy this week is Rinardo Green, cornerback out of Florida State. Maybe he's not a true sleeper because he's probably going to go third or fourth round. But the guy excels in press man coverage. Like, the guy's 6'1". He's a stud in press man coverage. He went up against the LSU wide receivers twice. He went up against Keon Coleman in practice every single day. You talk about if we're going to possibly lose Legarius Sneed, this is the guy in the draft that has the skill set to possibly replace him someday. He's not going to be Legarius Sneed on day one, but he could start as an outside cornerback at day one. So my stamp of approval on a sleeper of the week, I'm going with Rinardo Green this week. Caleb, who do you got?
I brought him up earlier, but I'm going to go with Braylon Allen. Like, I know everyone's going to say he doesn't fit the Chiefs, and to my comment, I'd be like, so we don't want a running back who can pass block well and has good hands out of the backfield just because he's not shorter than 5'10", and, you know, he is like a bigger, thicker guy. I'm like, having a guy like that back there on third down to be able to protect Mahomes, but then also bust him out in the screen game, let him run some option routes, some choice routes out of the backfield, that would really screw with teams, I think. And I think that if they did end up in a situation where they were able to use him and then they could also, like, unlock some more of the power running game, like we mentioned earlier, that would really screw with defenses a lot. I just love his physicality as a player. I think he's going to have a big week. He's just a physically intimidating guy, and that's, you know, that's the kind of guy you want up there, you know, protecting your quarterback on third down and long situations.
I love it. I'm a big fan of Braylon Allen. Honestly, I would love to see him in a Chiefs uniform. And Kramer, looking at our little note we have in the background tracking this, I see who you're about to say, and I have opinions, and I want to hear you say it, man. Though first. Kramer, who's your sleeper of the week? Go ahead.
Hey, my sleeper this week is Dylan Lobby out of New Hampshire, Wisconsin. Isn't New Hampshire, Wisconsin? What am I doing? The Wildcats out of New Hampshire. This guy, FCS all-purpose yards leader the last two seasons. I mean, this guy's going to get – he has a surefire of either running the football, catching the football, or, heck, even if he returns punts with the football. This guy can do it all, and – What more does Andy want out of a guy that can do multiple things? Whether if it is special teams, whether if it is catching a ball out of the slot if you needed him to, or running the football, this is your guy. And 33 touchdowns the last 2 years, impressive.
Kramer, you just had to pick out the Ladd McConkey of the running back class to be your sleeper of the week. Like if Kramer Sansone had it his way, the Chiefs team would be made up entirely of 5'10", 175-pound white guys. Like, that is like Kramer Santone wants an entire Chiefs team that looks like him. Like he just wants the Chiefs just to draft himself.
I'm almost 6'3", okay?
Well, I mean, okay, fine, whatever. Fine. Like, you want people that draft your, you want to draft a team of your little brothers then. Like, I mean, like, you just can't help yourself. And
I like this dude a lot, Rocky, man. This guy, I like him.
I like him a lot too. Actually, I think he runs really good routes and he's great out of the backfield. And I would be more on, because of where they're going to draft him, which is maybe even as an undrafted free agent. I think Dylan Lobby makes a lot of sense for this Chiefs team. Okay, so those are our sleepers of the week. As we start to wrap this thing up, one last thing we're going to do real quick is we talked a lot about how we think a lot of people in the draft community take themselves too seriously, and we're not those guys. And to prove it, we're going to celebrate our biggest misses today, guys that we put our flag in the ground on and we were wrong about. And we're going to call this segment the Draft Miss Confessional. A lot of times people say draft miss like it's a good thing, like it's like a take on Christmas. No, this is draft miss, M-I-S-S, confessional, where we're going to talk about our biggest misses in the draft and which ones broke our hearts the most. And as the host of this show, I'll start it off. In 2022, I gave Majai Sanders, the defensive end out of Cincinnati, a first-round grade. And I thought that he was going to be a pass rush stud, that I thought he was the answer to what the Chiefs needed to complement Chris Jones and put pressure on the quarterback. And he's on his second team since 2022 with, I think, zero sacks in his career. Another miss was Lewis Cine, the safety out of Georgia. I think at the time I sent out a tweet that said, I don't want the Chiefs to draft a safety in the first round. But if they draft Lewis Cine, I'm okay with it. This guy's a stud. He's a can't-miss prospect. He's a fourth. He's fourth on the depth chart at safety behind an undrafted free agent and has about 10 special teams tackles to his name since being drafted and is at risk of being cut this offseason and hasn't been able to stay healthy. And then the one that hurt the most was probably, you never forget your first, they say, right? You never forget your first love. And when, as far as this draft game goes of me trying to like scout guys out and predict who's going to be great, it goes all the way back to 2005 for me. And running back Ronnie Brown out of Auburn, the running mate of Cadillac Williams, I was convinced that Ronnie Brown was going to be a future Hall of Famer. And he was a very serviceable back in the NFL, but he was far from a Hall of Famer. He had one Pro Bowl to his name in his entire career. And I was convinced that this guy was literally like the second coming of Walter Payton when he came out in the draft. And so, guys, I get some things right. I don't get them all right. This has been my draft miss confessional. Caleb, I'm passing it to you.
All right. Yeah, this is my second season doing the draft eval for AP. This is like probably my fifth year overall doing this kind of draft evaluations in general, and I've always been studying it or into it. I'll go back to 2022 draft class. I thought Arnold Ebiketie was the truth. I watched his film from his games against Michigan and Ohio State, and I thought I was watching an avatar just running around the corner on these tackles, running, you know, sprinting downfield, running down wide receivers. And I remember I was being vividly upset when the Chiefs drafted George Karlaftis, because in my unintelligent brain, I was thinking, why did we just draft this guy who can only do one thing, play hard, over this guy that's got all these athletic traits? And now here we sit here a few years later, and George Karlaftis has been one of the most productive pass rushers from that entire class. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion, and Ebiketie is riding, you know, he's not even an every-down player right now for Atlanta. I mean, I can keep going back. I really liked Ezra Cleveland for some reason. I think he's a very mid-tier guard right now, not even really a tackle. Back in 2011, when Harbaugh was at Stanford, I really liked David Yankee a lot. I don't even remember how old I was then. I think I was in like early middle school, but I just remember, you know, watching that guy, and I was like, oh, this guy's probably going to be like a 10-year veteran. I think he played like maybe three NFL games. You know, we can keep going back. I was a big Clyde guy, big Clyde Edwards-Helaire fan. I was like, oh, this is just a genius pick. We're going to be unstoppable with him and Tyreek and Kelce with all the passes he's going to catch out of the backfield and how durable he is. And, you know, he's maybe not the fastest, and that's probably the last time I'll ever say draft a slow running back, Chiefs. So I don't know. Anyone that just remember – like draft guys and stuff, like every victory lap they take, just know there's like 10 skeletons buried in the closet somewhere for bad takes. That's literally everyone, all the way from AP film evaluators up to dudes who get paid to do that professionally in the NFL.
Oh, 100%. Like don't go looking at Mel Kiper's closet, right? You know, like he has a closet crammed full of bodies.
Skeletons. Beach. I mean, yeah. Brett Beach, he's still... I mean, before the back-to-back, there were people that they could not get over his first draft class because it was a mess. That first draft he had, you know, Breland Speaks and Dorian O'Daniel and that whole crew out of that, man, that was rough. But, like, everyone misses. This is basically the biggest crapshoot there is.
The Kerryus Keys and Colin Powell. I mean, yeah, 100%. All right, Kramer, hit us with who's your biggest draft misses?
So just while you were just talking, Caleb, one guy popped in my mind that when I was growing up watching, Kellen Moore, I thought he was the second coming of the next greatest quarterback known to mankind. I still think he's the greatest quarterback in college football history, but that's just me. It's a hot take for a different day. But as of recently late, it was either 2020 draft or 2021 draft. I don't know. I usually have to sketch that thing and get it out of my brain. But Dylan Moses, the linebacker out of Alabama, I thought he was going to be the best linebacker coming, like, he's going to come out there. He's going to be a force then and there. Hasn't even logged a snap in the NFL yet, I don't think, at least. I could be fact-checked and be wrong. But, man, I had so much high hopes on him. And also the Auburn cornerback, Noah Igbinoghi, I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't think so. He was drafted out of Miami, but then now he's in Dallas right now. Hasn't really done much. I thought he's going to be one of the most elite corners that had to come out of that draft. But, man, I missed on those two guys bigly.
Oh, man, we said Alabama running back. I mean, Alabama linebackers. I was so in on the Chiefs trading for Reggie Ragland. I thought Reggie Ragland was going to be like a 10-year, like Ray Lewis, like guy for us in the middle of the defense. And we didn't even draft him. Oh, man. Okay. So everybody misses. Nobody gets it right from the top down to the bottom. But we're always going to celebrate our misses here at Beach Season. So, celebrating our misses or our future misses, like the people who were willing to say, you know, I know I've been hurt in the past, but for you, I'm willing to fall in love again and to say, put my heart out there and just to let it get broken. We're going to talk about some guys that, as we wrap up here, who we know that this player is probably going to break our heart, but we're willing to put our flag in the ground on them anyway and say the Chiefs should draft them. And so for me, I'm going to start with wide receiver Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. Fifth-year senior, I think had 300 yards receiving in his first 4 years in college and then explodes this year for about 1,300 yards, 7 touchdowns, one of the most productive wide receivers in college football. Was listed at about 6'2", 215, goes to the Senior Bowl, measures 6 feet, 215. So measured at the weight, but not at the height. He's an older guy, definitely has that bust potential where this may, like was this year an aberration or anomaly, and have we seen the best out of him? Did he somewhere and just magically this season find another gear that he's never had before. And he just never had an opportunity. Like, this guy has bust written all over him, but I watch the tape and I see how physically he plays. And I say, I want him in a Chiefs uniform. I don't care. I know he's going to break my heart, but I'm willing to have my heart broken for Xavier Leggett, wide receiver out of South Carolina. Kramer, who's going to break your heart this year?
I think it's going to be the corner from Iowa State, TJ Tampa. I like this guy a lot. I've actually, for some reason, liked a little bit of watching my Iowa State football. And he always impressed me out there. I know he had only one interception last year, but, man, this guy was everywhere when needed to be, breaking up passes, tipping things. So I like this guy, but he's slow, and I think he will break my heart in the NFL.
Mm. And he's got such a great name. Like, he sounds like a guy. He sounds like a guy who would be in a football movie. Like, not an actual football player, but like a guy who's a character in a football movie. Like, oh, TJ Tampa, you know, with the play, you know, and you see it's like an Oliver Stone movie with Jamie Foxx and, you know, like Any Given Sunday, like a character from that.
Maybe the Tampa 2 defense is right for him.
Maybe Tampa 2 defense is right for him. Maybe it's because I live in Tampa that That's I'm true. Like, oh, TJ Tampa, what a crazy name. All right, Caleb, who's your guy?
I'm going to go with Mason Smith from LSU. He's young. He's only 21. He's got the 6'6", 315-pound frame. That's like something I look at very closely because he resembles Chris Jones a little bit. But then you watch him on film, and it's like he can go from being the most dominant player on the field to just looking uninterested a concerning amount of the time for me. And he doesn't really play his run gaps all the time on defense. I don't think he really has the greatest motor out there right now. But when he's fresh and when he's amped up and playing in a big game and ready to go, there's no one that can really hang with him. It's just one of those things where he'd have to be in the right system. But like I can see a team like, you know, that's very infatuated with physical traits, drafting him extremely high and then, you know, him coming in, not being in the right kind of system and just turning into a big flop. I think that could be a high possibility. I think if he ends up in the right system, though, he could also turn into like an all-pro caliber player. He's probably my biggest boomer bust I've looked at so far.
Yeah, it almost seems like he's like one of those guys that needs to be in the right locker room. And I know you want, like, you talk about locker room leadership a lot, but like a guy like Chris Jones, who had motor questions as well, who still honestly at times has motor questions today. But like having a guy like that, who's like, listen, man, like this is what it takes to be a champion. This is what you need to do. Something like that would be a situation where he probably would succeed. With that being said, everybody who's hung with us this entire episode, we love you guys. You guys are awesome. Caleb, thank you so much for hanging with us and for just coming on Veach Season and just giving us your dearth and wealth of knowledge and sharing it with us. Guys, check out Caleb over at AP and all of his awesome film breakdowns he does. Tune into him and Ron at the AP Draft Room on Fridays. They do an amazing job. If you want a good draft show, check them out. If you want a fun draft show, listen to us. That's basically where we're at with it. What you got coming up, Caleb? Like, here's your opportunity. What do you want to pimp out?
Yeah, I just had like 6 defensive tackles to watch the combine. I had that come out on Friday. Working on a little offensive line offseason preview right now. Hopefully that'll be out this week. And like you mentioned, man, me and Ron over there on the, you know, Friday mornings get started off a little draft content from us.
Awesome. And Kramer, as always, buddy, this is the funnest I've ever had doing anything in my life is hosting this show with you and literally like telling you to hush your mouth every time you bring up Ladd McConkey. I know I give you a hard time, but I love you, buddy. And this is super fun.
At times, I feel like you brought me on the show just to say, shut up, Kramer. I'm joking. Or am I?
I mean, you could be the heel. I mean, like Stone Cold Steve Austin needed a heel to beat continually. So
I can be your Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Yeah, you can be my Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'll be Stone Cold Steve Austin. You'll be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And Caleb's Hulk Hogan because he hasn't no wrestling. So that's a guy that he probably has heard of. So there we go. All right, everybody, this is awesome. Like we said, like, thank you so much for tuning in. We love you guys. You guys are great. Editor show this week with Pete. I think John's back from vacation. So with Pete and John, then we also have Great British Chiefs show is now on hiatus. I guessed it on their season finale. I think Coast to Coast is back though with Aaron Ladd and Mark Gunnels. Other than that, listen to everything we got coming on the website. Thank you for the privilege of your time. If you think that we were a good use of your time, we earned the privilege of your time with this podcast, then please go out, drop us a 5-star review and some kind words. Other than that, we'll talk to you guys next week. We'll hit you up with some combine follow-up. Other than that, be good to each other, and we love you guys.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.